Hey there, and welcome back to Cannabis Insider. If you are a seasoned listener and know the show, welcome back. And if it's your first time joining us, I'm Abby Higginbotham, and with me, as always, is the impeccable Pato Little. Today, we are diving into the heart of the cannabis in finance and policy.
That's right. Hot on the heels of Safe Harbor's financial impressive earnings report, we are joined by Jim Dennedy, Chief Financial Officer, and Donnie Emmy, Chief Legal Officer of Safe Harbor Financial. And they are basically paving the way into the landscape of cannabis banking. And we're eager to tap into their wealth of knowledge. So let's get started. Jim, Donnie, welcome. How are you doing today?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having us.
All right. So to get things started, and maybe to our viewers who may not know you yet, can you tell us a little bit about Safe Harbor Financial and about your roles in it?
Sure. Safe Harbor is what I would refer to as a banking intermediary. We work between the clients and the financial institutions where their accounts are domiciled. We do the cash pickups and collections. We deposit that with the Fed. We do the reconciliation of those cash deposits with the Fed to certify that the funds all came from legally derived sources. And then we credit, or that those deposits get credited to the accounts of our clients at the various financial institutions. What we also do with those same clients is, based on those deposits, is we have developed a suite of credit products for our clients to help them not only capitalize and grow their businesses, but also to help manage their working capital in their business.
That's an excellent overview. Thank you.
And Jim, let's get into the nitty gritty of it. Safe Harbor reported a substantial 245% increase in net income this quarter. What do you attribute this growth to, and is it sustainable long term?
So thanks for the question, Abby. Yeah, we do think generating positive net income is sustainable. I'll talk about things that happened that are operational and things that are financial. And so we had a couple of fairly significant financial instruments that changed in value on the balance sheet, the result of which you run through the income statement. So that contributed to a good bit of the $2 million. However, we were still generating positive operating income from operations to the tune of about $325,000, which was, a change from prior quarters. The biggest shift there is that in the first quarter, we had more credit issued in that quarter than any other quarter in our company's history, at better rates than we've ever issued before. So that contributed significantly to the operating income, which then, the revenue that dropped down to operating income. The other thing that we've done over the last year is we've taken a pretty significant amount of operating expense out of the business. When you look at year over year on the quarter, we took almost 36% of our operating expense experience in the first quarter of 23 out of the business by the time we got to the first quarter of 24. So it was a combination of the credit programs really taking off, as well as working down our operating expenses in the period year over year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the clarity. And you just mentioned the loans. So I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate on these strategic initiatives that nearly tripled your loan book year over year. How do these align with Safe Harbor's overall growth strategy?
So I think the general growth strategy organically is to, we use this term lead with lending, where we believe that whether it's in the cannabis industry or any industry across the United States, a company's access to credit and using credit products to not only provide for liquidity in their business, but also for expansion is critical. And the cannabis industry has experienced some, but not a lot of those credit products that have been available to them. And the products that are available have generally been at pretty high rates. You can look at some of the other straight lenders in the market, and the rates are really pretty high. And then you can call that the cannabis tax or whatever you want to call it. It's been a thing for a while. When we look at the operators and we underwrite mostly commercial real estate, we do some working capital lines, but the majority of the loans we issue are real estate backed. We take a fairly kind of traditional commercial real estate approach to it in the underwriting process. Now, when we do the loan to values and we look at the value of the property, we will evaluate both the cannabis appraised value, which generally tends to be higher because as a cannabis operator, you're going to be generating revenues and so forth from that location. And then we also take a look at the go dark or the commercially appraised value, and we'll do a kind of a split of the underwriting based on those two values. But our rates are generally much lower than what other issuers are providing the cannabis operators, generally 5% lower on a head rate. And that has attracted more borrowers to our program most recently than when we started. And again, the program's only about 12 to 18 months old. So it's still in its early stages.
Thank you for breaking that down.
So for both of you, given the revenue fluctuation, but a substantial increase in adjusted, but what can investors expect regarding profitability going forward?
In adjusted EBITDA, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, so the guidance we gave was that we would do modestly better EBITDA on modestly higher revenues this year. When you look at year-over-year comparisons, the first 9 months of 23 benefited from the accounts that we had that were domiciled at Central Bank. And when we had the dissolution of that relationship that we've discussed, we lost quite a few accounts in the dissolution of that relationship, about 250 accounts. And so when you evaluate year-over-year performance, where you had 9 months with 250 more accounts last year over this year, and to understand that we're targeting to do slightly better EBITDA year-over-year on slightly better revenue, we feel there's still pretty good growth evidenced in the business.
Yep, definitely. And now jumping to Donnie, I wanted to ask you, with the potential reclassification of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 and all the discussions around it that are going on right now, what are the immediate legal implications for financial institutions like Safe Harbor?
It's a good question, and we get that one a lot. The rescheduling doesn't have an immediate implication for example, Safe Harbor or even our financial institution partners. From a lawful to proceed with the marijuana product status, it just changes the type of scheduling, what it is, and will primarily have an impact on the operators from a 280E standpoint on a tax basis. Now, how that impacts us and our financial institution partners is our customers and our clients are now going to have more available cash or cash flow. Their underwriting criteria will change because of the tax implications. So we will benefit significantly as a business. What it also will do is change the landscape that the financial marketplace in general has on marijuana. It'll bring forward perhaps circumstances where payments, credit card payments, transactions such like that, and the more traditional financial services offerings will start to become available. But what it won't do is open up banking and make banking normalized for the entire industry. And that's where Safe Harbor has a pretty good stronghold on the compliance part that Jim was mentioning before. This is still and will remain a cash intensive business. Even if marijuana were legalized as much as to the same extent as alcohol would be. And because it will always remain a cash intensive business, there will be financial institutions that stay away from the space, particularly because the BSA, the Bank Secrecy Act, and the money laundering laws are very severe. The penalties to be very severe, the consequences to a financial institution, depending on its size, could be tens of millions, $50 million for BSA-related fines if they're not doing the compliance aspect of it well. And what we at Safe Harbor do, I mean, our secret sauce is developing the compliance backbone of how to handle that cash as it enters our financial institution partners. So we look forward to that rescheduling, but primarily the focus would be to our clients, our customers receiving the benefit of that, as well as us in the long run as being their banking partner.
That's a compelling point. Thank you.
And you might have already answered this, but to go dig deeper a little bit, how do you plan to attract further capital investment, especially considering possible changes?
Is the question how do we plan to attract further capital investment?
Yes, that's yes.
Okay, a good question. We have been in conversations over time on various capital plans. One real material opportunity with us being presently situated as, to my knowledge, the only issuer on the NASDAQ exchange that is focused solely on cannabis financial services. We have a tremendous opportunity before us as that first mover to accumulate and acquire other similarly situated businesses that offer financial service offerings to the cannabis marketplace. Our size and our ability to scale and grow has allowed us to compress our margins on how the cost of compliance is. So it allows us to, puts us in a position where we can go out and attempt to accumulate other portfolios out there that perhaps have the higher margin cost on compliance that don't have necessarily the scale that we do to be able to do that. So in attracting capital, it would be primarily to engage in those types of transactions, both portfolio acquisition, but as well as a broader merger and acquisition strategy.
Thank you for shedding light on that, Danny. And Jim, looking at the industry, what are the major trends that Safe Harbor believes will shape the future of cannabis finance?
Well, outside of the either descheduling or safer banker that you've already touched on, the act that's going to hopefully change things for the landscape for the industry and make it a more normal industry. I've been doing this for a while, and when I first was in the finance of cannabis, the operators would explain to me every time they walk into a bank, they feel like they're the pariah and everybody's kind of looking down on them. They don't feel normal when they walk into a bank, even though they're running every bit of a legitimate business as the next person. I think that normalization of we're just a normal business is something that I think needs to take effect. And these folks that run these businesses, have been doing this quite a while. They're great people. The contracts that have been honored over years on a handshake, I've never seen people do business like this before. It is incredibly awesome to see where you don't need a piece of paper, you don't need an army of lawyers, people honor their word and they just transact. Now, I think what I believe is going to happen is something that Donnie touched on, is that with either safer banking or descheduling, the operators are going to have more cash available to them from their operations in order to finance and grow their business. Instead of taking 21% of your gross profit, which is a huge bite, you're going to pay 21% of your net income. Now, that net income and that lower tax burden is going to be repurposed. It can be repurposed for expansion, repurposed for new product lines. It's going to be an exciting time. And I think while those funds are waiting to be deployed, they need to reside at a financial institution. They need to reside at a banking partner. And we intend to be that banking partner. And what Donnie mentioned is that, we have good first mover advantage, but we also have scale. We have 765 or so accounts, and we reported a good whack of deposits on balance. In order for a competitor to get to that point and operate with the efficiency that we have, there's going to have to be a lot of money that goes into recruiting and attracting clients. And the primary way they're going to do it is by either reducing or eliminating fees. And we have every bit the programs available to our clients currently to help them manage fees, and then also to recruit and retain new clients from the industry. Right. And that's our key focus as we grow organically. Now, Donnie also mentioned a little bit about M&A. There are plenty of financial institutions that we think haven't yet developed enough critical mass of accounts to operate and serve them as profitably as they had planned. So let's say you're a financial institution with less than 250 accounts and maybe less than $50 million on deposit. You're probably not going to be generating enough operating income relative to expense of compliance, which is very expensive, particularly if you foul it. The penalties are severe. That we think we can acquire those accounts based on the software that we've developed, not only for the onboarding, but the continuing compliance evaluation. We can service those accounts at a more efficient cost of service than anybody else in the industry. And that's where we think our growth objectives lie.
Super interesting perspective. Thank you, Jim.
And finally, open question for both of you. Thinking ahead, what are some of the initiative projects Safe Harbor is prioritizing for this year?
So it's products. The industry wants more products. They want more credit products. They want more payment products. They want to facilitate transactions more easily with their clients than they currently do. If you look at any retail business in the market, generally, when people pay with non-cash forms of payments, the average check size goes up between 18 and 22%. It just does. Mm-hmm. Now, as Donnie indicated, our industry is likely to be cash tied for a really long period of time. Even with SAFER passing, if it passes, many banks will not want to do business with money-centric businesses. They don't want to add that cost of compliance to their business. So whatever we can do to help our clients facilitate and make transactions more smoothly with their customers, those are the things that we're interested in investing in and to deliver to our marketplace and to our clients.
That's a fascinating landscape, the one you're painting, and apparently also a bright future. It's the one you have for Safe Harbor. So Donnie, Jim, I think this is a really good note to leave us off on. And we are really excited to watch the continued growth of Safe Harbor. So thank you both for sharing your invaluable insights with us today.
Thank you.
And this is another captivating episode of Nzinga Cannabis Insider coming to an end. So let us know your thoughts in the comments below. And a big thank you to Jim Dennedy and Donnie Emmy for shedding light on the Safe Harbor Financial's remarkable achievements and the future of cannabis finance.
Absolutely. And we really do mean it. In the comments below, let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you would like to see next. And to all our listeners, we appreciate you tuning in. Stay connected with us on all social media for the latest and greatest in the cannabis industry. Stay knowledgeable, stay green, and until next time.
Bye.